Mr. Jackson, Real 5. You were telling me how at Kohima you were asked from D Company headquarters to take forward some grenades to 16.
Well, just part of that, when he said they want some grenades at 16, so I said so. So he looked at me and laughed, because you can't take the signals away because they're maintaining it. Can't send the company commander sort of thing, can you? And so I said, I've lost a short straw, and I, Frank. So he said, guessed it right first time. So I got these two boxes of grenades, and I wriggled my way up to 16. Yep. And the sergeant Milichak, I think it was there, as I got towards him.
Well, what? Tell us what was happening as you went forward. What were you
travelling
across?
I went across, got out of a little gangway between the trees, and that. So as I got towards him, like they make signs here to keep your nut down, and I wriggled up. I said, "Here, person, two boxes of pineapple for you." So he said, "They primed." I said, "Oh no." He says, "No, don't sound so good to me." So I'm sitting there alongside of a tree, and there's all kinds of shot going over the top, and I'm priming the grenades. No one's primed them quicker than me. I primed two boxes of grenades quicker than anybody must have done, I think. I primed them all, said, "Yeah, Bert." And I wriggled all my way back, and I came back. I don't know if it's the same day or next day, but all kinds of things are happening at Kohima.
What kind of things?
Shelling and firing that, and you're coming back a bit, we was completely outnumbered. So there was a lot of troops. It was a depot actually, before the war. And so you got a lot of troops that weren't combatants. And they were a nuisance at first. They'd got a lot of them out in the first couple of days. And there's one or two odd marks, SM rifles and all that. Excuse me. And all kinds of things were happening. So I came back to camp there, of course. And I wasn't enjoying myself one tiny bit, you know, coming along on my own. I got back, old Frank says to me, that Sergeant Major, old Frank Haynes, all that time I said, "Dad, they got them." So I sit and prime them, and he just laughed. And we sat there, and like I say, the firing going on all around us, and that you're not sitting down, you're sort of keeping your eyeballs open, going around like a lighthouse.
Now, can you describe the company headquarters? I know you can't remember where it was, but what was the actual setup?
Holes, just holes. There's no sort of camp, just a hole down. Quick.
And what was in there?
In camp, the commander had one on his own, like with his bits and pieces, papers and that. Frank Haynes had his one, and the two signals shared one. And that, well, they used to try to separate them, because if one became a casualty, there's a chance the other one would, you know, what? And
it's, now, your sergeant was Frank Haynes. Now, what was Frank Haynes like?
I tell you what, if this country was filled with Frank Haynes, we'd be the best in the world.
Now, what was so good about him?
He was a straight, honest bloke. And he wouldn't ask you to do the impossible without his chances. He was great. And I know of nobody who had a bad word against old Frank Haynes. He came from Guildford, actually.
And the other one was the major, and that was Major Easton.
Easton, yeah.
Who's still alive?
Yeah, I see him at the reunion.
And what was he like as a young major?
Yeah, gentleman.
What was he like during Kohima?
Well, he was commanding it. And I say we had these holes at the signals, and the sergeant major, and the commander, and me. So I've been out of this with these grenades, and all kinds of things happening over. All of a sudden, hell broke loose. And everything's happening. So the signals gave me a slip of paper. So I've wriggled over the company commanders. And said, "What's that?" Because I hadn't even looked at it, to tell you the truth. Not as unusual. And he just went, So after about four lines of boom sort of thing, "So what? Between you and I," says, "24 hours BTW.
BTW?
Back to the wall. "Oh, thank you very much." So I came back again and got in position. And all of a sudden,
what do you mean you got into position? Sorry.
In me hole. Got back in my own little hole. And all of a sudden, hell broke loose and everything was flying.
What was it like?
Well, shells and bombs. You know, you don't. firing, rifle firing, all kinds of yelling and shouting, because the Japs used to shriek, you know, shout. And all kinds of things happening. So I suppose in my own mind I'm thinking to myself, this ain't very good, Tom, like that sort of thing. So I'm making signs to the Sergeant Major. So he says, call me over, he said, you can tell Tommy one or two things. So he said, now get up there, he said, and find a hole. He said, I'll be up there with you in a minute. So I wriggled up this little bit of a pathway, and there was a hole there with an officer and a Havildar. That's an Indian sergeant in the army, in the Indian army.
Now, why were you doing that? Why were you moving forward?
He told me to move. Because it was, see, so I jumped, I thought that's the nearest hole, I jumped in with next to this officer, and it was off out of the Bombay and Sappers Miners, and a Lieutenant Wright, as he was then. And as I said about jumping in the hole, I must have fell in it, I should think, like grease lightning. What's happening, boy? I said, well, if they come up the hill, I said, we've had our chips.
You don't know the name of the hill?
It was part of the Kohima Hill. Like the, what part it was, I can't... I said, if they come up the hill, I said, we've had our chips all... It's all like the top. So he says, right, he says, we'll do the bees. He said, we'll have bayonets. So I thought myself, that's it. You know, my old bum's going like that sort of thing. So he said, oh, yeah. He spoke to his Havildar. In his language, quicker than that, his bayonet's out and fixed. I thought, well, he's keen. So, standing there, my bum must have been pouting a bit, I suppose. Standing there, it's all kinds of things happening. The next thing I heard, just down below, Frank Haynes saying to me, Dom. So, what? Come on. I said, I'm in a hole. Come on, he says. So I wriggled out, I said, what? He said, now get up there, said, and find another. Cut the holes. Be out there with you in a minute. He said, take the signals with you.
Why?
Just because we'd come down there every time we could hold nothing else at that particular point, see? We were getting the real right hammering. Like, we're outnumbered, start, you know, partly, you know, and the shelling and all that.
So you're looking, you're retreating?
Well, no, not retreating as such, no. We've taken up another position, we don't retreat.
But was it behind where you
just
were?
Just back a bit. So... He said, up and find a couple of holes for the signals and us, he said. So I said, signals, come on. One was named Pummel, I believe, and one was named Harris, I'm not quite sure. Because they were from telling their quarters, they weren't company blokes. So we grabbed this hill, there's a couple of holes. So I sent the one signal. I says, here's a hole for you. And he dumped it. I said, here's a hole for you. And as I said, there's a hole for you. He started to, ah, what? So they got me. And he's taken a lump in his thigh. So I said, good luck. I told myself, good luck to you. I've jumped in the next hole, see? So that was that. So I'm standing, looking, waiting for the Sergeant Major to come up because I found a hole in it. So all of a sudden there's a bit of a lull. And I don't know who it was, come up and handed me a Sergeant Major's badge, wrist badge. So I said, what? They said, as you left Frank, he bought it, Frank Haynes. He got killed. And they took his badge and his revolver and compass and brought it up and gave it to me. And that was Frank Haynes. Captain, or Major East, or Colonel Easton, he got wounded. Sergeant Major was killed. One signal was wounded, so it was out of the five of us, there was one signal and me.
Now, was this when the VC was won?
No.
Right, okay, sorry.
The VC was when I took the grenades.
Let's drop back to that story, because you were a friend of his. What now? What was his name? And can you tell me?
Jack Harmon.
Jack
Harmon.
Now, tell me about what you knew of Jack. What was Jack Harmon VC like? He was a sergeant. Was he?
No, Lance Corporal. They made him have a tape. He didn't want anything.
Now, tell me what Lance Corporal Jack Harmon was like, as far as you were concerned, because you were a friend of his, weren't you?
That's army friend, like, you know. But he was a genuine bloke. If he knew there was a sticky job coming and there's two of you, he'd be with you. He wouldn't say, well, you go and I'll wait here for you. So he's with you, you go and come. Because if you ever, actually, that's how he got killed. Being an individualist, actually. Because you know about his killing.
Well, did you see it?
No, I didn't see it, no.
Well, tell us a bit more about him then, before you know, because it's really your friendship with him that makes
see,
it. What? Tell us stories to let us know what he was like.
Well, when you spoke to him, he never he never had a coarse kind of, like boys talk about birds and God knows, you know, like the feminine type, like, but he was more intellectual sort of chap to speak to. He didn't pitch me about any other things than that. And he had a nice sort of way. And he'd offer me something, well, what do you know, Tom? And he knew that I couldn't say anything. And he's the kind of a bloke that, if ever I was in, he'd be the kind of bloke I'd want with me. But see, I've never with them kind of people. And I don't know of anybody in his platoon or in our company who had a bad word for Jack. He was that kind of person. He'd fill in with you, you know, and lead you. He wasn't no fool.
You used to share escapades with him, didn't you? I mean...
Oh, well.
What do you remember of that?
That one, that's when we killed the cattle, that was.
Well, tell us that story.
Well, everyone knows, when he asked me about my Tommy gun, and I told him to go and get lost. So, you know, he said, let me borrow it. He said, on two or three rounds, he says.
This is in the Arrowcan?
Yeah. And I says, get lost, Jack. Because I'm the only one with the Tommy gun in the company to look after, like, and I've got two. So, couldn't be no... Can't say where he got it from. See, so what we can do is, I'll tell you when I come back. The next thing I see him disappearing with a shovel, GS shovel, like the old spade. When he come back, he was saturated, he's been sweating, digging in the heat. So then disappeared, and then look what I heard. Da da da. And then I heard no more for a long, long while. So after a while, back comes Jack, beaming all over his face. So how many did you kill, Jack? So like, something sorry. Only one, he says. Not thinking, you know, I was thinking of enemy, like. So he coerced this herd of cattle over towards him, shot it, and before he'd done it, he dug two holes. And when he killed it, he skinned it and gutted it and cut the meat out, and he's thrown the offal and all the rubbish in one hole and hanging the bits of meat over bamboo, which he'd got, over the other hole. So back he comes, so this is Tommy gun. I says, don't want to check it. He said, I've cleaned it. Knowing Jack, I knew he had, see, so I laughed. And that night, as I say, various people on various ranks had a bit of steak.
Now, why did he need a Tommy gun rather than just his rifle?
Well, yeah. With a rifle, you only fire one shot. Tom, with a Tommy gun, you can fire two or three quick, can't you? Right?
Any of the stories of Jack Harmon, or is that the main one?
That was the main one. Other little thing.
Now, what happened? How was he killed? I mean, I know you didn't see it, but what? You might as well tell us the circumstances.
He was in 17 platoon, see. So I say he's more like an individualist. He say, "I'll do that. You keep an eye for me," sort of thing. And he had several escapades and. Chapter and the go his section and that, and they came and they wiped the section out. They killed quite a few, like, and then there's another bit of bother. One bloke was being a bit awkward on the opposite side, so Jack said to his section, apparently, keep me covered, and I'll go at the machine gun post. It was to give us a bit of aggro, but he said, I'll do them from here. They came in, come from up, he goes. And he wipes out this section and done them all up.
Japanese section?
Yeah. And he grabbed hold of the gun they'd been firing at us and he waved it around. He said, oh, I got it. And as he come back, one of them got one dead, shot him.
And he was killed?
Great bloke. And I mean that because, and you speak to anybody you might meet out there, there won't be one bad word about old Jack. He was that kind of person.
Now, so, we go back to where we were. You just got to where Haynes was killed and Eastham had been wounded.
Yeah.
And you'd fallen back a bit.
Yeah.
So, and you were looking for a new place. Now, but obviously the headquarters was disrupted.
Yeah.
So what happened
said,
next?
I don't know who moved into our positions or what took over there, but we sit back on the other side of it. Like, and I was in this hole with the colour sergeant. He was in the next...
Do you remember his name?
I think of his name in a second. Of course I would, you. Bert, no, I think of him, I should call him everything, Bob Bert, but I'll think of it in a minute.
Okay, so whereabouts was
he? He came from Tunbridge, actually. People had a business there. But we're in these old... this is after about 15 or 16 days we've been having the right old set through there. And we was at there at the end of our tether, more or less.
Now, tell me, what state you were in?
Oh,
what state
physically?
Were you in? Yeah, physically, you know, because...
Well, anyone who's been under fire for over a fortnight and then was shaved or bodily functions, that would be where you stood, sort of thing. You stank like the... You didn't like yourself. You walked away from yourself because you smelt so bad. And you were thinking, there must be a better day tomorrow. And you weren't getting a better day. You was getting a bad day because as you got casualties, it was getting worse. And when he told us to pull back and take up another position... And I was in with the colour sergeant. I'll think of his name in a minute. But, I've lived with the bloke for years and don't. So, anyway, and they said, you're going to be relieved. I said, well, that's good. Now, as I say, we hadn't washed or shaved or anything like that. We'd been living like... And then they said, the Berkshire Regiment are going to relieve you. I said, I don't care who it is. I said, Salvation Army can relieve us. I said, if it's any good... And we're sitting in his holes, and all of a sudden this bloke come up, because you couldn't move out until this bloke come and took your section over. I was in this hole, I must have looked nice, I must have looked pretty. Guy Fawkes would have run away from me. And what he says, there's this, can't you smell, he says. I said, yeah, you look at the tail of your shirt tomorrow morning. And I said, see how you smell, I said. And a few more, keyed him up. So he said, what are you going to tell me? I said, keep your so-and-so eyes open. You're head down. I said, some silly chatting. I didn't hang about to her. Just, it was very quickly said and done. I come out and sort of wriggled down. And the orders was, keep X no distance apart and run. I'll tell you what, I could have got an Olympic medal the way I come down there.
Now, what have you actually been doing? Most, it sounds like you were doing sort of odd jobs for the company headquarters. Yeah. I mean, you know, because obviously you weren't doing a daily thing. What were you actually doing on the hip while you were up there?
Defence of company headquarters. You're right, you're first and last. If you're being attacked, you have to stand your ground and fire like the rest of them. Because it was a defensive position, see? It wasn't attacking position as such all the time.
Now, well, did they actually attack? Did you actually have to open fire yourself?
I fired. Whether I hit anybody, I was cause in the trees and that, you know, because it was the tree at first, but it devastated afterwards. There was nothing left of it afterwards. It's, you know, they fit firing both from both sides.
Did you come under much fire?
Yes, we did.
What kind of fire?
I would not say what it was. That's where our Colonel Easton got.
Was it artillery or mortar or rifle fire? Do you see what I mean? Small arms.
Yeah, it could have been rifle. When we were under fire, as I said, old Frank Ainge said to me, find us a couple of holes, and I wriggled out. So we're not talking about any distance, we're only sort of a matter of a few yards away each time. And it could have been a mortar, it could have been a shell, it could have been a rifle. But I should imagine it was a shell, if both of them got it at the same time, more or less.
Now, what happened when you came out? You got back, you ran back, ran down. Well, how many came out? I mean, what was your impression of the state?
We went in 70-odd strong, and 27 come out of Kohima, like that particular day, I think. Look, some were killed and wounded, you see.
There were just 27 left of the company,
didn't it? It came out that particular time, I think it was. And they said, when you get relieved, move. And really moving. This bloke out of the box, he had a sort of, in a nice way, like in the G up. And I was saying to him, like, and we came out there and we got down on the road and they said, get up the road a bit. And I'm not sure, actually, do you want a cup of tea? They says, it's like saying, do you want £1 million? Like, you know, and
I
cup
you've not got any. What had you been eating or drinking during the 14, 16 days?
Whatever? Oh, yeah, the colours might come through with bits and pieces at times, but when you say, you hang on to what you had in case it didn't come again. Yeah, it was survival. But, and so when I got down the road and they said, do you want a drink? You know, it's just like saying you want £1 million. And we had a mug of tea. They said, move down another few yards. They had a mobile lorry of shower unit. And they'd out and give us, Then they took us back to Dimapur. Now, when we got back to Dimapur, we hadn't been there very long, and they wanted to send us back up. And the padre stepped in then. He said, "You're not sending them boys up to..." He never said, "Don't do it." He said, "You're not sending them boys up to fight." He said, "You're sending them up to sacrifice them." He said, "We wouldn't, no numbers, and physically wouldn't. We were horrible looking lot." But it's funny, I'll tell you a funny little thing, but we were there at Dimapur, and I was the only bloke who had a light of it. I had a hurricane lamp, so I could fight any messages that come through. And I was sitting in this little bamboo basher, you know, because nowhere to go, you couldn't go anywhere. I was lucky, with a light, I could do a bit of reading and all that. And they said, "There's canteen coming up tomorrow." Canteen, so I was off. They said, "The Wasbys. That's the Women's Auxiliary Services, Burma." So I said, "Oh, that's all right." They said, "Got all kinds of stuff." So, morning breaks, and I said, passed the word around and through the sergeant, major, whoever it was, and all that. The Wasbys are coming. So they says, "Well, let us know when it arrives." And they had these bamboo bashers. Well, as I say, they hadn't washed or shaved. And the boys have got their ground sheets laid out in front of these bashers, stripped off, you know, principle. Stark, not a stitch of clothing between them. And all of a sudden, the Wasbys arrived. Well, I wasn't thinking about where the van was going to pull up. "Wasbys," I shouted. And that's the Wasbys van pulled up with the three ladies in it. A line of blokes stark naked. I've got to wish them Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And we had Elton Doris Waters come there, I think. Goes showing one of the huts. Then after a while, back up your kit and back we go. It's up again.
Where to?
Went up came down through Burma then. All kinds of places. Then again.
Now, what do you remember of those operations in Burma? I mean, because you moved out of India through into Burma, up the road through Kenya,
and then on.
Well, do you remember those operations?
Well, it's all kinds of punch-ups here and there and around the place and getting shoved, but it wasn't quite so one like Kohima.
What were the jungle conditions like? Can you talk, I mean, generally, a bit about what the jungle was like and fighting in the jungle?
Bamboo is one of the wickedest weapons there is. Sharpened. And if you brush against a broken shampoo, it cuts it to bits. And it bends in there. And bamboo's not just bamboo canes like you see gents walking around with. It can be enormous thick stuff. You know, well, maybe I used to build huts and that, you know, the bases of a hut with it and all that. Bamboos, the jungle and all everything else going with, and the insects, anything like that.
Didn't you like the insects?
You scratch yourself with the bits, don't you?
What kind of insects?
Well, I don't. I'll tell you one thing. When we first moved up in India, I was sitting waiting for the charwala, and he's crouching down, all of a sudden he whipped out his knife. And I thought, he's going berserk. And it was, what they call them. He cut his tail off, this insect, and I went to, "Don't do that," he said, "because it's still got to sting it." Oh, Christ.
Scorpion.
He said, so I was wearing that, and ants, there's red ants, white ants, and black ants. Now, the white ants would eat anything, because they built up once, and up, not at a tent, they built up a sand against the tent pole under the cover of my blanket covering the table. If I hadn't tumbled it, they'd have got onto the table and eat through everything on the table. The white ants, black ants are a nuisance, and the red ants really bite you. They do bite you.
What other insects or animals? What about snakes?
I never saw many, never in the jungle, actually. So, whoa, tell a lie. A bootlace snake. I saw a couple of bootlace snakes, I think.
Well, they're quite deadly, aren't they?
They're short ones, yeah. So one of the boys went to pick it up. Someone went, you know, "Don't do that." Because when you pick up on a towel, see? No. And of course, we had water buffalo as transport sometimes. And we had anything for transport we could get. There's all kinds of things. Because, as you know, we pushed right round through Burma, having all kinds of punch-ups and aggravations with all kinds of people.
you wouldn't be involved particularly at your end of things, would you?
No, not. See, when we're defensive, I got away with it mostly. See? But when you go into attack, I've never done much forward work. I've within the company perimeter, like, but because I'm alongside the company commander. See, your general dogs, I don't know why, our company runner was always left back at base looking after kit, which might be 100 miles away. And I used to go in between, do the running as well.
Now, what was the job of company runner? What did it actually entail? What was it like?
Taking messages from company commander out to company commander. And you don't read them.
How tough was that? I mean, what was it like?
Well, if the position was sticky, it could be naughty, a company runner. But if not, but Coimbra, there wasn't enough room to do any running. Sort of, you sort of just wriggled round and there's no distance, like. It's, but see, in, I suppose in other, like we're in the desert, like you're more spread out. But I say then we've done all kinds of things going right round through Burma.
Were the messages written down, or?
Oh yeah, written down, yeah, and a lot of them are done in sort of code and that. I wasn't with that, was I? But no, okay. Some come in. And
how did the reinforcements fit in? Because you'd had a lot of casualties, hadn't you, at did the reinforcements fit in?
Some of them were pretty good, but one or two didn't know what it was all about, like, you know.
In what way?
Well, they hadn't been under fire, like, you know, they didn't know what the reaction would be. When someone fired you, did you know how to turn around and run away? You'd have to say, well, you have some back. But with a bloke, I suppose, who hadn't been under fire, but no, we had a pretty good lot. I can't remember.
Did they fit in? Like the old, I mean, you were a strange yourself. Yeah. They were a Kent territorial unit. Yeah. You were from London. Yeah. And then suddenly they were smashed up. Yeah. Did the new drafts from everywhere, did they fit in all right?
See, now, London Fusiliers, they all come from, a lot of them come from around London, you see, the other side of London. And so when you're all thrown together and you've got to watch each other's backs, haven't you? And I only fell out with.
So the drafts fitted in well?
Pretty well, yeah, as far as I know, because I say I never mixed in. They all seem to be like, because won't read one or two other cookies, as I say, that undetected crime, as they say in the army. Because we had certain officers used to go, look that way, you know. They,